And from the KTOL Newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. Fairbanks North Star Borough officials are searching for places that could offer more stable housing for Typhoon Halong evacuees. More than 1,000 people from Western Alaska communities were displaced because of the flooding and damage from the storm's hurricane-force winds. Hundreds were evacuated to Anchorage, where many are staying at mass shelters while agencies work to transition them to more private locations. Borough Mayor Grier Hopkins says the borough's Emergency Operations Department is participating in the state-established housing task force. He said as of Thursday, he only knew of a few families who'd evacuated to Fairbanks and that they had personal support systems in the area. But he wants the borough to be ready to help connect people impacted by the storm to medium to long-term housing in the interior if they come. He says his office is compiling a list of local options.
Right now, you know, the list is fairly short as we're trying to understand what capacity there is out there, what hotels have space, but the need has not arisen yet that anybody is coming to Fairbanks in droves.
Hopkins also says borough staff had conversations about opening a mass shelter earlier in the month when damage in Western Alaska was becoming apparent. He says he focused primarily on Joy Community Center, a former elementary school.
My discussions were, let's make sure Joy Community Center is available. It's got showers. It's got bathrooms. It's got, you know, smaller rooms for classrooms as opposed to just one mass shelter room.
The borough assembly voted to close Joy Community Center earlier this year as a cost-saving measure. Hopkins says repairing it would have involved some work up front, like getting bathrooms running again, but that the borough ultimately wasn't called on to provide a mass shelter. A major rock slide has been threatening Skagway's busiest cruise ship dock in recent years. Earlier this month, numerous industry experts were in town to present options for long-term mitigation. But as Melinda Munson with KHNS reports, none of the choices were easy or cheap.
A rock slide above Railroad Dock in 2022 prompted a study by the geological firm Shannon & Wilson. That report stated the firm's opinion that, quote, the slide mass will eventually fail, and the consequences of such failure will be catastrophic in nature, with significant risks to life and property. Kyle Brennan is a project manager for Shannon and Wilson.
Nobody wants the big failure to happen and then not be ready for it.
The municipality has been doing routine scaling work, which is basically removing loose rock. They installed additional fencing and netting and instruments to measure ground movement. During tourist season, they send someone up the mountain each morning to take photographs. Brennan says the mountain needs long-term mitigation.
We're able to keep track of what's happening up there, and right now we have safe operation of the facility at the bottom, but it's time to move forward and take care of this larger hazard with these unstable rock masses at the top of the slope, because the failure will eventually happen, but predicting when it's going to happen is very difficult. And so right now we have time, you know, to be proactive about these things and take care of them. It is in the best interest of the community and everybody else.
Shannon and Wilson presented four options. Option one concedes that the rock is too difficult to move and will therefore remain in place. The dock and everything below would be moved to a safer distance. Option two would excavate the unstable rock and send it down the slope, where it would be collected and hauled off-site. Option three leaves the rock mass in place and attempts to stabilize it. Brennan says this would be a case study. Option four would excavate the rock mass and move it up the slope, leaving it on the mountain. The team wholeheartedly prefers option two.
We're looking at modifications to the dock, but for the most part, it's just simply excavation and removal and letting gravity move the rock for part of it and then picking it up and putting it somewhere else. This seems to be like our lowest risk option right now.
The municipality was awarded a nearly $20 million grant for the project from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. But a majority of that money dissipated with President Trump's administration, leaving only the funds for the design portion of the project. However the municipality chooses to move forward, and however they manage to pay for the multi-million dollar project, Brennan says it's not going to be easy.
It's a tender site. It's going to take a lot of TLC to get that rock down, and so we want to make sure we're doing it in a purposeful manner that's safe, that'll achieve the goal without catastrophe. The last thing I want to do is stand up here in front of you guys in a couple of years and try to explain why everything went sideways.
Skagway resident Lynn Davison was one of many intently listening to the presentation.
I hear you talking about these alternatives and when the decision is made, but how and who How is that decision going to be made?
The decision, the ultimate decision, is not one that Shannon and Wilson and our design team will make independently of anybody else. The city will be involved with that decision and ultimately will likely be the ones to make that decision based on our input and based on all of your input.
Brennan says there will be at least two more public meetings before the construction phase. Project options can be found at skagway.org under the government quick link tabs. In Chicago, I'm Melinda Munson.
The city and borough of Wrangell is pausing work at a housing project after archaeologists confirmed artifacts at the site. KSTK's Colette Zarnicki has more.
While excavating a subdivision development site on Wrangell Island, construction crews uncovered a shell midden. Middens are ancient sites made up of shells and other remains. They help tell the story of who lived there and how they lived. The borough government owns the property and is pausing work near the midden until a state-approved mitigation plan is complete. Wrangell Borough Manager Mason Villarma says development will continue carefully.
It's been a 30-year pursuit in some cases. We are, you know, into a $4 million investment, and this is an opportunity for 20 housing lots, but being cognizant of any culturally significant artifacts is top of mind.
Currently, the Office of History and Archaeology and the State Historic Preservation Office are working on a treatment plan for recovery of the site that will involve further investigation and excavation. The property has a complicated history. It was once the site of the Wrangell Institute, an Alaska Native boarding school known for punishing students for speaking their language and other abuses. Albert Reinhart, the administrator for the local tribal government, Wrangell Cooperative Association, says the site carries deep meaning.
There's a long history of colonialization that includes the Wrangell Institute, what we prefer now to call the Alaska Native Boarding School. A lot of families got separated in that time, and even my own family, there was a lot of trauma.
In August, excavators found remnants of the old boarding school, a footbridge, concrete, and utility lines. Construction was paused until the State Historic Office determined last month that the infrastructure would not be on the National Register of Historic Places. The 134-acre Aldertop Village site will eventually include 20 home lots. The public land sale auction is continuing and closes on December 1st. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
Months after Joann Fabrics stores closed in Alaska, the gap in craft supplies is being put to the test at a crucial creative time of the year, Halloween. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry spoke with a drag artist, a costumer, and a mom in Juneau about how they've adapted to make costumes for the holiday.
Normally this time of year, Juneau's largest craft store would be full of plastic pumpkins, skeletons, ghosts, and of course, fabric. But instead, the former Joann Fabrics in the Nugget Mall sits dark and empty. A spooky reality, say local costume makers. Elizabeth Bauer makes her 5-year-old daughter's Halloween costume every year. And usually, she wants to be something a bit unusual.
Last year, she knew for months she wanted to be a white bat. And so it's like, you can't find a white bat costume anywhere.
Bauer found white furry fabric at Joann's and made wings and a headband with bat ears for her daughter. But this year, Bauer is scrambling to find the materials she needs to make another unusual costume, a hybrid jaguar and parrot from her daughter's favorite cartoon. She needs to make a pink base outfit, leopard spots, wings, and a tail. And she has to find all of the materials and finish sewing by Friday.
There's not one store that you can go to and get all of those items that you're looking for a craft project. You have to piece it together between all these different places.
Meanwhile, in Maggie Hyde's costume closet, she holds up a blue and green dress with scalloped ribbons of different colors.
This is a dress I made.
The shade of the fabric she bought online is not quite right.
I made it work, but these two shades were supposed to be a lot more different. They were not supposed to be the same shade, but on a website, they looked very different.
Hyde is a costumer. She participates in Juneau's annual wearable art show, where creators show off costumes they've made themselves. And she designs outfits for Renaissance fairs, cosplay photo shoots, and, of course, Halloween. She says it's a gamble to buy materials online for her creations. Shipping costs are often high, if a company even ships to Alaska.
How is this whole process of shipping, of looking? And that just makes it a lot more difficult. You kind of have to adapt.
Juneau drag mother Gigi Monroe says she and her fellow drag performers have been doing just that.
You know, for professionals, like, we know how to get what we need and figure things out.
But this year, she had to pivot from a costume idea for Juno Drag's Halloween show because she couldn't find the more niche materials anywhere. She says Joann's usually had that kind of thing. And she says the store's closing also impacts her methods. She would often go to the store with parts of an idea in mind and figure out the rest based on what fabric she could touch and see in person.
There's a lot of designing that actually happens in the store. And you don't really always have to go in knowing exactly what you need.
When they first heard the bad news, Monroe and other performers went to Joann's clothing sales and stockpiled some heavy hitter supplies, like rhinestone glue. Monroe says other stores in town, including Juno's two quilting shops, help fill some of the gaps. And for Juno's more casual costumers, there are still options. Kathy Buell is owner of the party store Balloons by Night Moods.
Halloween is our biggest, busiest season for anything that is not balloon related.
Its shelves are stocked with ready-made costumes that fit infants, kids, and as many sizes for adults that Buell can find. They also have pieces that can be added to homegrown costumes.
We have makeup, we have wigs, we have hats, prosthetics that you put on with latex, blood, lots of blood.
And there's still a lot left for holiday procrastinators, she says.
We still have a lot of stock, and the reason is because we honestly, I'm already, and it's not even Halloween yet, I'm already buying for next year.
Still, the hole left by Joann's closure is a hard one to fill. But Gigi Monroe says there's a letter-writing campaign asking national craft chain Michaels to step in. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And right now in Juneau, it's 43 degrees and overcast. This is KTOO. Thanks for tuning in.